ما بعد، فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والسابقون الأولون من المهاجرين والأنصار والذين اتبعوهم بإحسان رضي الله عنهم ورضوا عنه، صدق الله العظيم. My dear respected elders and brothers, in the two Jummas preceding the last Jummah, we had spoken about the life of Hazrat Uthman al-Ghani radiyallahu ta'ala anhu, his moral character, his attributes, some of the incidents in his life. And we concluded in the Jummah that we were speaking about his life on how he was appointed as the Khalifa of the Muslims, the entire procedure, and why the Sahaba felt that after Umar radiyallahu ta'ala anhu, Uthman al-Ghani radiyallahu ta'ala anhu was the ideal person to become the Khalifa of the Muslims. We had done that in some form of detail. Continuing from there, Hazrat Uthman al-Ghani radiyallahu ta'ala anhu's Khilafat, especially in the first 6 years, was one of great blessing. It was one of great prosperity. It was one of great conquest. It was one in which the Muslims were progressing in every sense of the word. Especially the first 6 years, the Muslim empire and the Muslim reach at that time stretched from India. At that time there was already Muslim presence in India, right up to North Africa and right up to the Atlantic Ocean in northwest of Africa. Muslims were also making type of forages into Europe at that particular time under the Bani Umayyads. The Muslims were at that time amongst the people who were in complete control and the most powerful force and in the world at that time. Uthman al-Ghani radiallahu ta'ala's Khilafat, there were many firsts and many things that he initiated, amongst which was he apportioned salaries for the muazzin from the straight treasuries. This was initiated by Uthman al-Ghani radiallahu ta'ala. Amongst his things was he had the second adhan called out for the Jummah azan, Jummah prayers. The second azan that we have just before the khutbah was initiated by Uthman al-Ghani with the mashwara and consultation of all the Sahaba ikram, Ridwanullahi ta'ala ajma'in. Some of his administrative first was, he was the first person in our history, Islamic history, of having title deeds issued to show land ownership. So title deeds is not something that we get from here. It was from the time of Uthman al-Ghani radiallahu ta'ala. He designated grazing fields for camels and horses in the state treasury. So in today's time, we would say a military budget to be able to look after the armaments. So in that time, the armaments was the horses and the camels. And he had designated from the public treasury certain amount to be able to feed and to graze those that were used as a means of jihad and the means of military type of conquest. Constructing buildings for the state treasury and for mehman khanas, inns for travelers to come and stay in. Constructing a port in Jeddah. Constructing bridges and roads as required. Establishing a shipyard to build seafaring ships in Syria. Appointing an accountant for the state, you know, a state protector. So this is not something that is only in the Zuma administration. Something that time he had appointed an accountant to be able to see the budget of the state and how it was used. Constructing a flood wall to prevent Medina from being flooded. Digging wells at various places as required. The reason why I'm making mention of some of these aspects is that many a times you and I regard these aspects, bhai to dunya ke kaam hai, ye jo hai na ye deen ke kaam nahi hai, hame usse kya lena dena. But this was initiated by Uthman al-Ghani radiyallahu ta'ala anhu to show you that in Islam there isn't this dichotomy between deen and dunya. We believe in the harmony between the two. We believe in rabbana atina fid dunya hasana wa fil akhirati hasana. Oh Allah, give us good in this world and give us good in the year after. One remarkable aspect that I would just like to speak about was that he was the first person to initiate a naval expedition. The first time that the Muslims took part in a naval war was in the time of Uthman Ghani radiallahu ta'ala anhu. In the time of Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu, Muawiyah radiallahu ta'ala anhu asked Umar that I want to set up a navy. We need a navy because the Roman and Byzantine Empire are controlling the Mediterranean. And we would not be able to fight with them if we don't have a navy. And Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu was hesitant. So Uthman Ghani radiallahu ta'ala anhu gave him the go-ahead. And the first navy was established. The first naval expedition, the first jihad on the ships was in the time of Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu. Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam told Ummi Haram that everyone who takes part in the first naval expedition, Allah Ta'ala has forgiven them. So Ummi Haram radiallahu ta'ala anhu requested Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam that Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam must make dua that she must be amongst them. And just for interest sake, for people who have a biased sense of history, Nabi Karim sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, every one of them is forgiven. And amongst them was Muawiyah bin Abi Sufyan. Hazrat Muawiyah radiallahu ta'ala was amongst those in that first naval expedition about whom Nabi Karim sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, Allah ta'ala had forgiven and Allah ta'ala had declared his forgiveness for all of those who partook in that first naval expedition. You see, this is also another aspect we don't learn from history. You know, someone had said, the only constant in history is that you don't learn of history. The only constant in history is you don't learn from history. Just further on, a little bit away from the topic. The Ottoman Empire who ruled over the Muslim world and over the world for 500 years, their main basis of ruling from the military point of view was the navy. There was the navy. And one of the chief people who used to be behind their genius in naval expedition was a Scotsman by the name of Murad. He was a person who came from Scotland, who was not appreciated because of his talents by the Western world at that time, who used to give people, you know, positions based on different merits, not on merits, based on aristocracy, based on wealth, based on where you come from, based on family. So he came to the Ottoman Empire, and that time the Muslim Khilafat used to reward people on the basis of merits. And through the means of his merits, he rose to become the chief designer of the navy in the Ottoman Empire. Now look at today what happens. And I want you to think about this. Today, anyone who's got any talent in medical, in nuclear, in physical science, or in other science, where does he go to? Does he go to the Muslim world or does he go to the Western world? The Western world appreciates it. Go and look at America, the medical doctors, the sciences in NASA. Many of them are Muslims who have not been appreciated by their homelands. I mean, just see the difference in our approach. And perhaps part of this is because we have created this dichotomy between deen and dunya. And that was not in the time of Sahaba. So Hazrat Uthman radiallahu ta'ala was the first one to do the jihad on the navy. And this was such a remarkable aspect. And nevertheless, these were some of the aspects that I'm just making mention of some of his exploits and the tremendous achievement. Now comes a time, the next 6 years, which is known as a time of turmoil and fitna. Now various reasons with regard to this turmoil and fitna. What happened was, before I go on to make mention with the turmoil and fitna, it's such a vast subject that even if you speak an entire day, you will not come to an end. Never mind in a small Jummah talk for 15, 20 minutes. But just briefly to speak about these aspects. After this, we know the initial stages of Islam, they were people who were great people in terms of their morality, in terms of the iman, in terms of the taqwa. The entire society was built on a very firm moral basis and a very firm moral situation and moral foundations. As you went away from the time of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, new people came into Islam. Now it is not possible for you to think that they are going to have the same level of taqwa and iman. The Sahaba Ikram were there, but more and more people. You went right up to Afghanistan. The people who came new into Islam were not the very same. Then there were cultural differences. There were social upheavals that took place. There was prosperity that came into the Ummah. And Nabi Karim Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, one day when the Sahaba complained to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam about poverty, that Ya Rasulullah, we are poor. We can't meet our needs. So Nabi Karim Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, I don't fear poverty with regard to your iman. Poverty will not cause that amount of harm to your iman the way prosperity will.
Allah will give you so much wealth, and you will be misled by that wealth the way the previous people of the ummats were misled because of prosperity. Hasan Basri rahmatullah alayhi says, in the time of Uthman, the Muslim empire stretched from where to where. There used to be ghee and honey given out from the Baytul Mal to the people of Medina and to the Muslims. There used to be a tremendous amount of prosperity. They had, you know, because of the fact that in some ways the end of conquest was reached, but the people had come to the known world at that time. So what actually happened was, when all of that stage reached, then what happened is people started unsheathing their sword against one another. In the words of Qari Tayyib Sahib rahmatullah alayh, and this fits into our situation also, that you know, when you don't have an external enemy, then you start fighting amongst your own self. And he said there was imarat, there was khilafat, people used to fight for that. We don't have that now, so we fight amongst ourselves on maslam aside, on upside down chicken. Nevertheless, this is a situation that is happening all the time that we learn from history. Now this was the thing. There also another aspect was rumor mongering, piety based on ignorance, and then of course the conspiracy of the enemies. Now before we make mention of the turmoil, let me say one important, you know, when you look at history over what was the turmoil, who was involved, how it was, you know, it's so easy to get confused because of the different historical narrations. Even when I read into the late hours of last night trying to think of all this, I think one important point that I think we must always use, if anyone is going to read about Sahaba and the history of the Sahaba, few things. One is, never ever cast aspersions on the life of the Sahaba. Never. Sahaba cannot be judged by history. Sahaba cannot be judged by history. History will judge Sahaba. Sahaba cannot be judged by history. Sahaba will judge history. That's the way it should be. What I'm trying to say is, if you want to know who the Sahaba was, then you see what the Quran and Hadith says about them. And the Quran and Hadith says, radiyallahu anhum, Allah is happy with them. And then you find historical books that cast different, you know, allegations against them. So who do you believe? Do you believe history? Or do you believe what the Quran and Hadith says about them? No. Sahaba cannot be judged by history. Sahaba will only be judged by what the Quran and Hadith says. So if someone speak about the Sahaba in a way that is consistent with what the Quran says, we will accept that history. But if some historian writes about them in a way that is not consistent with what the Quran says about them, we say, by keep your history, we don't accept that history. That is the way we're supposed to do. And people have gone, prominent scholars, and we need to make mention with regard to it for the sake of general knowledge. People like even Sayyid Qutb and Maududi, prominent writers, have made the mistake of basing their books on historical narrations, and they have gone to criticize people like Uthman Ghani radiallahu ta'ala, unfortunately and very wrongly, because when you look at other history, there is answers with regard to it. Then you had the dubious people who were enemies who could not see the rise of Islam. Foremost amongst them was Abdullah bin Sabah. Abdullah bin Sabah is also, by many historians, said to be the founder of Shiism. Now, when of course Muslims have gone to such great progress, there is such great, you know, everywhere there is prosperity, there is happiness. Enemies cannot see this. So what they did was, they started getting people against the governors of the different lands, Kufa, Basra and Egypt. They started getting the people against, and they raised complaints against those governors, false complaints, came to Uthman Ghani, our governor is not right, this is not right. And then through the means of the complaints and the evidence, when Uthman Ghani radiallahu anhu used to take action against those governors, then they used to say, Uthman Ghani, aliyadu billah, he is punishing people who are innocent. So it was a no-win situation. They were bent on making fitna and bent on creating turmoil in the Muslim ummah. And of course the Sahaba ikram ridwanullahi ajma'in perhaps had never encountered such deception. So then they came to, you know, different ways. And then eventually in the 35th year after Hijri, 300 of them, 100 from Kufa, 100 from Basra, 100 from Egypt, they used Egypt as their base, because the governor of Egypt was, you know, partaking in the North African expedition against the Byzantines, against the Roman Empire. So they came into Medina Munawara, and they had all these complaints against Uthman Ghani, that you have appointed people who are not competent. Usman Ghani radiallahu anhu told Ali radiallahu anhu, go and listen to them. Whatever their complaints is, you will listen to it. Then they said, Usman Ghani radiallahu anhu showers favors upon his relatives. Usman Ghani radiallahu anhu replied, there is nothing wrong. I was always wealthy. And even before Khilafat, I used to spend upon my relatives. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, to spend upon your relatives is double thawab. I didn't use public money to give to my relatives. I used to do it before Khilafat, I do it after Khilafat. What is wrong with that? Then they said, you use pastures and this land to graze the animals. I said, yes, it's not my animals. I had so much animals before Khilafat, I only got two camels left. So every allegation they made, Usman Ghani radiallahu ta'ala anhu gave satisfactory replies. And the historical books have written in detail with regard to the allegations and his reply to them. Then they told that we want to change the governor of Egypt. So he said, okay, who do you want? You want someone? But I'll write a letter that you must go and take it and change the governor of Egypt. If that is what you want. So when they took that letter and when everyone in Medina felt the whole matter is now being sorted out. Now when the whole matter, everyone came back, they got a surprise when after 2 days those same people came bursting into Medina. And they said, we have been deceived, we have been deceived. But this is part of the conspiracy. Because two of the ring leaders of this conspiracy, by different names, one was Malik Ashtar and bin Jabla, they remained behind in Medina all along. So this was part of the conspiracy. So they said, what is the conspiracy? They said, the letter that was written by Usman to change the governor of Egypt, in reality Usman Ghani radiallahu anhu wrote a letter that when these people come to Egypt, the governor must kill all of them. So the people who brought this letter were one who were going towards Kufa and Basra. So Ali radiallahu anhu asked them, you know, Iraq is a different place and Egypt is in different directions. How is it that you people who were going to Iraq intercepted a letter that was going to Egypt? This is part of your conspiracy. Now, you know, as I said, I can go on making mention with regard to it, but just as I conclude, I think I would like to conclude this in today's time, so bear with me if I take a little bit more time. Next week is also, inshallah, we will be speaking about various other aspects that will be at the fore. So as they realize that this was part of this conspiracy, how